Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is October 8, 2019. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about cryptocurrency donations to politicians legal in Japan, says Internal Affairs Minister. West Virginia's blockchain voting pilot may have been breached by a student. Bitcoin startup Casa updates Lightning nodes after shipping 2,000 in year one. EU Finance Commissioner vows new rules on crypto, Libra stablecoin. Hong Kong Securities Watchdog issues rules on funds investing in crypto. Casa releases new version of its Bitcoin full node Casa Node 2. Bitcoin Core Dev, anti-51% attack measures always imply centralization. Telegram finally confirms it's behind Ton blockchain. Tiny $217 options trade on Bitcoin blockchain could be Wall Street's death knell. Bitcoin eyes $8,500 hurdle after biggest single day price gain in 5 weeks. Foreign exchange giant CLS admits, no, we don't need a blockchain for that. Bitcoin's dropping Lightning capacity might not be a bad thing. China Merchants Bank's latest crypto partnership includes STO investment. The silver lining in Block 1's SEC slap on the wrist. State-owned French bank joins Bitcoin startup's $8 million Series A. Now let's get started. Cryptocurrency donations to politicians legal in Japan, says Internal Affairs Minister. Cryptocurrency donations to political parties received a thumbs up from Japan's Internal Affairs and Communications Minister Sanae Takaichi at a press conference Tuesday. According to a report by local media Kyoto News and syndicated by Reuters, Takaichi said political donations in cryptocurrency do not have to be disclosed under the political funds control law, unlike cash and securities. Therefore, crypto donations could also be made without limit. Cryptographic assets do not fall under any of the above regulations, and don't limit donations, the minister said. As crypto donations become more mainstream, Japan's political parties will have to address taxonomy and rules themselves, Takaichi continued. Because it will limit the political activities of politicians, it will be a problem to be discussed by each party and each group. Japan's cryptocurrency industry is heavily regulated by the Financial Services Agency, FSA, which approved zero exchange openings in 2018 and only 16 in 2017. In July, CoinDesk reported some 100 exchanges were seeking regulatory approval before launching. West Virginia's blockchain voting pilot may have been breached by a student. Someone attempted to tamper with West Virginia's blockchain-based voting pilot. Disclosed for the first time via public address on Wednesday, West Virginia Secretary of State, Mac Warner, said there was an unsuccessful attempt to breach the pilot program, dubbed the Military Mobile Voting Solution, during the 2018 election cycle. Though specifics cannot be revealed while the incident is under investigation by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, Warner said no votes were altered, impacted, viewed or in any way tampered with. Developed by Medici-backed blockchain startup Voitz, the mobile app maker was tapped to provide citizens and military personnel deployed overseas a secure way to vote. The app uses facial and thumbprint recognition and stores voter-verified ballot receipts on an immutable ledger. The system worked as designed and intended. The attempt was detected, thwarted at the gate and reported to the authorities, Voitz CEO Nimit Sahni told CoinDesk. To date, the startup has conducted more than 31 pilots, including an implementation in Denver, Colorado's municipal elections this past May. It completed a $7 million Series A in June. The hackers' IP addresses were turned over to the FBI, who will determine if crimes were committed. CNN reported Friday, the addresses may be tied to students enrolled in a University of Michigan election security course. Bitcoin startup Casa updates Lightning nodes after shipping 2,000 in year one. Casa, a Bitcoin custody provider and manufacturer of hardware nodes for Lightning, Bitcoin's scaling layer, is launching a new version of its flagship device. The new node will process transactions faster because of its larger memory unit, 4 GB versus the current node's 1 GB, better processor and new software, Casa CEO Jeremy Welch told CoinDesk. Also, unlike the current version, the new node will have a built-in BTC Pay server, a self-hosted crypto payment processor for accepting Bitcoin payments, Welch said. New features are expected to make the whole experience of opening Lightning channels and sending funds much smoother, he said, adding, "It's like going from iPhone 3 to iPhone 11. The new node has been about 6 months in the making and comes in response to a growing community of Lightning users, Welch said. This community, according to Welch, ranges from young software engineers to older people, from doctors to students. Since the company started selling the Lightning nodes last fall, Casa has shipped over 2,000 devices to buyers in over 65 countries, according to Welch. The firm, however, can't see where all these nodes ended up plugging into the network. The beautiful thing is, we have no idea where all these nodes are, Welch said. They are connecting via Tor. It's all about privacy protection. Lightning is an experimental network for faster Bitcoin transactions, allowing users to open channels between each other by staking the Bitcoin they want to use. Only the final settlement results, not each small transaction, are recorded onto the Bitcoin blockchain. EU Finance Commissioner vows new rules on crypto, Libra stablecoin. Valdis Dombrovskis, the European Union's Financial Services Commissioner, said he intends to create a new regulatory framework for cryptocurrencies, particularly Facebook's Libra stablecoin. Europe needs a common approach on crypto assets such as Libra. I intend to propose new legislation on this, Dombrovskis said in a confirmation hearing seeking for reappointment on Tuesday with EU policymakers. The former Latvian Prime Minister has been a Vice President of the European Commission for the Euro and Social Dialogue since 2014. He is one of the 28 commissioners in the European Commission from 2014 to 2019 and has been in charge of financial stability, financial services and capital markets within the EU. Dombrovskis' comment comes on the heels of an increasing level of scrutiny by the European Commission over Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency initiative. The Financial Times reported on Monday that the Commission last week sent a questionnaire to Facebook and the Libra Association, asking them to address various questions regarding financial stability, money reserve and private risks related to Libra. According to the report, the questioning was part of a push by Dombrovskis to examine how the EU should allow or regulate crypto initiatives like Libra and whether new laws will be in need. It said Dombrovskis has indicated there is a strong willingness to act at an EU level when it comes to Libra. Just last week, PayPal, one of the big name members in the Libra Association, formally withdrew from the Facebook-led initiative. Hong Kong Securities Watchdog issues rules on funds investing in crypto. Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission (SFC) has issued regulations for fund managers investing in virtual assets. In an October 4 announcement, the financial market watchdog formalized a framework put out in November last year that was aimed to regulate funds that allocate more than 10% of their portfolio in virtual assets. The 37-page regulation, which is effective immediately, defines virtual assets as digital representations of value which may be in the form of digital tokens, such as digital currencies, utility tokens or security or asset-backed tokens. It also includes any other virtual commodities, crypto assets or other assets of essentially the same nature, regardless of whether they fall under the definition of securities or futures contracts under the agency's existing ordinance. Other than that, the document is fairly broad, as much of it follows existing regulations on fund managers licensed by the SFC in general. For instance, fund managers investing in crypto assets must have at least $3 million Hong Kong dollars, $382,000 of capital, similar to the minimal requirement for the SFC's Type 9 asset management licensees. An independent compliance officer needs to be appointed, and detailed compliance procedures must be drafted. Crypto fund managers must appoint a third-party custodian and the assets of the fund and the fund manager must be kept separate. Fiat currency must also be kept separate at a licensed Hong Kong financial institution or in a jurisdiction approved by the SFC. When choosing a custodian, the fund manager must establish that the institution is capable of dealing with virtual assets and that it understands relevant concepts, such as wallets. The SFC does allow for self-custody if certain requirements are met. In terms of trading, the SFC requires fund managers to conduct extensive due diligence on crypto exchanges before using any virtual asset trading platform. CASA releases new version of its Bitcoin full node CASA Node 2. New York-based crypto custody startup CASA has released CASA Node 2, a new iteration of the industry's popular pre-synced Bitcoin (BTC) full node product. Original CASA Node did a great job, the firm says. According to an October 8 blog post, CASA Node 2 offers a faster and smoother Bitcoin and Lightning experience by deploying a faster processor on the Raspberry Pi 4 with 4GB RAM and a 1TB SSD. In the announcement, CASA stated that their original CASA Node did a great job as a full Bitcoin and Lightning node in a reliable device. However, the firm wanted to do more and was planning to improve their hardware in order to do so, CASA said. Early upgrades to CASA Node 2 are available in pre-order mode, the firm added. Nodio's update. As part of the announcement, CASA also introduced a new version of its native node software Nodio's, which now has an updated design and dark mode. Following the launch of the update, the CASA Node 2 will also be running major open-source Bitcoin payments processor BTC PayServer. CASA will distribute its Node 2 devices in limited numbers in October and November at a discount price of $300, according to the announcement. While CASA claims that the original CASA Node was highly effective as a full Bitcoin node, some customers reported that earlier iterations of the model were slow, while agreeing that plug-and-play nodes like CASA are here to stay. In August, Litecoin (LTC) founder Charlie Lee said that he has been investing in CASA and expressed high hopes for the company. Bitcoin Core Dev, anti-51% attack measures always imply centralization. Bitcoin Core developer Greg Maxwell has criticized the attractive mystery that fear of a 51% attack on Bitcoin (BTC) entails, arguing that it betrays a fundamental lack of understanding about the cryptocurrency. In a Reddit post published on October 5, Maxwell argued that any mechanism cooked up to mitigate the threat of a 51% attack always implies centralization and represents a far greater threat to Bitcoin's integrity. Bitcoin's fundamental focus. As Cointelegraph reported previously, a 51% attack can occur on blockchains that use a proof-of-work (PoW) algorithm and essentially entails a user or group seizing control of the majority of mining power to monopolize control over the network. This, in particular, can allow the threat actors to reverse transactions in an attempt to double spend. It is achieved by transacting crypto for fiat currency and then rolling back the deed to recuperate the spent crypto while pocketing the fiat. Responding to the question of how to mitigate such a threat, Maxwell robustly argued that any such attempt necessarily compromises decentralization at the heart of the Bitcoin project. He noted that Bitcoin focuses on solving the problem of achieving consensus on a stable history of transactions. This issue can intuitively be solved by establishing the firstness of a given transaction, rendering duplicate subsequent operations invalid. Maxwell continued, in a truly decentralized system, first is actually logically meaningless. As an inescapable result of relativity, the order which different parties will perceive events depends on their relative positions, no matter how good or fast your communication system is. Anti-51% fixes centralize the system but just hide the centralization. Maxwell criticized more centralized systems, naming Ripple, EOS, and IOTA for resorting to a single party determining firstness and imposing this on the rest of the network. Bitcoin's fundamentally decentralized nature instead relies on the vote of computing power through mining without the involvement of any centralized third party. Maxwell argued that any mechanism that would allow to prevent the rigging of this vote by one party or several would almost certainly let you just replace mining entirely. He explained, People have cooked up 1001 complicated schemes that claim to do it without introducing centralization, but careful analysis finds again and again that these fixes centralize the system but just hide the centralization. A far bigger risk to Bitcoin than the reordering of transaction history that 51% attacks could lead to, Maxwell concluded, is that the public using it won't understand, won't care, and won't protect the decentralization properties that make it valuable over centralized alternatives in the first place. As Cointelegraph reported, crypto exchange Gate.io pledged to reimburse users this January after finding out that a 51% attack had successfully occurred on the Ethereum Classic, etc. blockchain. Telegram finally confirms it's behind Tun blockchain. After raising $1.7 billion last year and maintaining almost complete radio silence since, messaging app Telegram is finally going public with its involvement in the Telegram Open Network, TUN. The first mention of TUN and its native Gram tokens appeared on Telegram's official website Tuesday morning in the form of a Terms of Service (TOS) for the token's wallet app. According to the TOS, Telegram will integrate the wallet into the company's flagship messaging app and also offer it as a standalone product. We have no control over the TUN blockchain network and therefore cannot ensure that any transaction details that you submit via the services will be validated and confirmed on the TUN blockchain, the document reads. The wallet is provided by the London-based Telegram FZ LLC, one of the entities Telegram registered for messaging operations and an official publisher of the Android-based Telegram app. According to the TOS, Telegram will not keep either personal information of its users nor their public and private keys. You are solely responsible for managing and maintaining the security of your credentials. If you lose your credentials, we do not have the ability to recover your credentials or assist you in retrieving your credentials, and you may not be able to access your grams. The company also states it has no control over processing and verifying the transactions on TUN. According to the TOS, the transactions you submit via the services may not be completed, or may be substantially delayed by the TUN blockchain. We have no control over the TUN blockchain and do not have the ability to facilitate any cancellation or modification requests to transactions you have submitted. A fee may be imposed on your transaction by the TUN blockchain. We have no control over the amount or type of such fees. This is the first time Telegram has publicly acknowledged the link to TUN. Neither the company's CEO, Pavel Durov, nor other company representatives have ever announced the project or commented on it. So far, only the registration of TUN's Simple Agreement for Future Tokens (SAFT) with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission (SEC), which listed Telegram, Pavel Durov and his brother Nikolai had formally linked the company to the blockchain project. Investors bought the Future Gram tokens during two closed rounds in February and March of 2018 for a price of 37 cents and $1.33 each, respectively. In early September, the code for TUN's blockchain nodes was released and on October 2, investors received emails with links to TUN's key generator so that they can access their actual tokens. The project is scheduled to launch no later than October 31. Tiny $217 options trade on Bitcoin blockchain could be Wall Street's death knell. The cryptocurrency industry isn't replacing Wall Street just yet. But inventors and entrepreneurs are working on it, with some initial success, albeit modest. In this case, an option premium of 0.0202 Bitcoin, $217 at the time, paid via a smart contract may have just become the proof of concept. The latest target for blockchain disruption is options trading tied to the Standard & Poor's 500 index, the main benchmark for U.S. stocks. It's a massive market, with roughly $400 billion of the options changing hands every day last year, on average. Under the current setup, Wall Street firms typically execute the trades and handle the settlement afterward, essentially making sure the securities end up in the buyer's account, and that the cash ends up with the seller. But for investors, the process can be expensive, due to the middlemen fees being charged, and slow, with settlement typically taking a day or two. In July, Emmanuel Go, CEO of Paris-based firm SKU, a startup specializing in analytical tools for the crypto industry, says he came up with the idea of using the Bitcoin blockchain, the decentralized computer network underpinning the decade-old cryptocurrency, to trade S&P 500 options. Go was previously a trader in London for JP Morgan Chase, the largest U.S. bank, where he slung options on auto, chemical, consumer and industrial stocks. In other words, the options market is an arena he knows well, at least in the traditional sense. Earlier this month, SKU, which spells its name with a period, announced $2 million in seed funding from several venture capital firms, including the Silicon Valley icon Kleiner Perkins. The S&P options project was entirely experimental, Go told CoinDesk. The challenge was mainly to see if it could be done. The publicity probably doesn't hurt, either, since the trade would essentially be automated via computer programming. It would be less expensive to conduct and settle a lot faster, maybe in just 10 or 15 minutes, according to Go. Go said the technology that made it possible comes from Crypto Garage, a subsidiary of the publicly traded, Tokyo-based tech firm Digital Garage. Crypto Garage has developed an expertise in smart contracts, small strings of programming that can be encoded into the Bitcoin blockchain to run when activated. The transaction needed to cross on the Bitcoin blockchain, Go said, because it's the most secure in the industry, even though smart contracts are generally considered easier to program on the Ethereum network. The transaction. So on September 6, Go says, he took some British pounds from an in-house research and development fund at SKU, converted those into Bitcoin, and then used the proceeds to buy 10 S&P 500 call spreads, a popular type of option from Crypto Garage, all under a new smart contract, with terms agreed to by both counterparties in minutes. The expiration date for the options was set for the third Friday of the month, similar to the standard practice on many exchanges. At the outset, SKU paid an option premium of 0.0202 Bitcoin, $217 at the time, via the smart contract, and Crypto Garage posted 0.04667 Bitcoin as collateral. On September 20, the expiration date, the smart contract automatically used a price feed from Atlanta-based Intercontinental Exchange, parent company of the New York Stock Exchange, to establish the final price for the S&P 500. The trade went in SKU's favor, resulting in a payout of 0.036 Bitcoin, $365 at the time. Crypto Garage got 0.01 Bitcoin of its collateral back. SKU later sent some money back to Crypto Garage, as a true-up. Above is an image produced with data from the Bitcoin blockchain, the trade settlement, at expiry. Initially daunting, it's the elegant simplicity here that is the promise of a blockchain-driven future. At the top, that string of letters and numbers in blue is the ID number for the transaction. On the left, the blue string is the address where the collateral is stored, and the white number is the amount of collateral, in BTC. On the right, the top blue string is the address of the winning counterparty in the trade, which got back the white number of Bitcoin, and the blue address just below that is for the losing counterparty, which gets back the leftover collateral. In yellow, on the lower right, it shows that the transaction was confirmed 2068 times by the blockchain, and then the yellow number of Bitcoin is the total BTC proceeds distributed to the two counterparties from the collateral, after deducting the fees. Scaling limitations for Go, the big takeaway from the exercise is that it worked. The trade settlement took 45 minutes to process, with total transaction costs equal to a few US dollars, he said. The smart contract knows exactly how much the parties will get back. In theory, he says, the cost would have remained the same even if the notional amount of the trade had stretched into the millions or billions of dollars. The important part, he says, is that you don't have all the intermediaries. Could the new process be scaled up to handle the volume of S&P options trades currently handled by securities firms? Probably not without improvements to the Bitcoin blockchain's processing capacity, Go says. But a lot of programmers are working on doing just that. In the annals of technological breakthroughs, it's not exactly Ben Franklin hanging a key on the end of a kite. But the little $217 options trade might be a step forward in making financial markets cheaper and faster to use with less Wall Street involvement. Bitcoin eyes $8,500 hurdle after biggest single-day price gain in 5 weeks. View. Bitcoin could test key resistance above $8,500 in the next day or two, having eked out the biggest single-day rise in 5 weeks on Monday. The daily chart indicators have turned bullish with Monday's price rise. Acceptance below the 100-week moving average (MA) at $7,756 would revive the case for a drop to $7,200. Bitcoin (BTC) logged the biggest single-day price gain in 5 weeks on Monday, opening doors for a stronger recovery rally to key resistance above $8,500. The top cryptocurrency by market value bounced up from a historically strong 100-week MA support near $7,750 and closed UTC at $8,205 on Bitstamp, representing a 4.47% gain on the daily opening price of $7,863. That is the biggest single-day price rise since September 2. Back then, BTC had rallied by 6.3%, confirming a short-term bullish reversal. The breakout, however, ended up creating a bearish lower high near $10,950 on September 6. Monday's price rise could be termed as a relief rally, as the cryptocurrency was looking oversold, having dropped by more than $2,000 in the last week of September. Further, there were signs of seller exhaustion below $7,800, as discussed yesterday. Many observers believe the recovery rally could be extended further to resistances lined up above $8,500 and near $8,600. For instance, market analyst Josh Rager tweeted earlier today that Bitcoin price could now run up to $8,500. Rager warned in another tweet that prices need to rise above $8,500 to invalidate bearish lower highs set up and confirm a bullish reversal. Popular analyst at the CryptoDog believes the probability of a sell-off to $7,200 has dropped with Monday's 4.47% price rise, and a bigger rally to $9,400 could be seen if resistance at $8,500 is convincingly breached. As of writing, the leading cryptocurrency is changing hands near $8,200 on Bitstamp, having hit a high of $8,344. Bitcoin created a bullish outside bar candlestick pattern on Monday, above left, which occurs when the day begins on a pessimistic note, but ends with optimism, engulfing preceding day's high and low. The outside bar candle is widely considered an early sign of bullish reversal, especially when it appears at the bottom of an established downtrend or a notable price drop. In BTC's case, the candle has appeared following a drop from $10,000 to $7,715. Further, the MACD histogram, an indicator used to identify trend strength and trend changes, has crossed above zero, confirming a bullish reversal. Meanwhile, the daily line chart, above right, is reporting a bullish divergence of the 14-day relative strength index, RSI. A bullish divergence occurs when the RSI produces higher lows, contradicting lower lows on the price chart. It is considered an advance warning of an impending bullish move. All in all, BTC looks set to challenge October 1's high of $8,531 in the short term. A UTC close above that level would invalidate the bearish lower highs pattern, as tweeted by Josh Rager, and confirm a breakout on the intraday chart, as seen below. BTC is charting a double bottom pattern with the neckline resistance at $8,531. A break higher would confirm a breakout and create room for a rise to $9,348, target as per the measured move method. That said, more credible evidence of a bullish reversal would be a break above the 200-day MA, currently lined up at $8,586. This is due to the fact that the 200-day MA is widely considered as a barometer of a long-term trend and served as strong resistance on October 1. The case for a drop to $7,200 would strengthen if prices find acceptance under the 100-week MA at $7,756, as discussed yesterday, although as of now that looks unlikely. Foreign exchange giant CLS admits, "No, we don't need a blockchain for that." Blockchain technology is nice to have, but it's hardly a must for rewiring the global financial markets. So says Alan Marquard, Chief Strategy and Development Officer at CLS Group, the global utility for settling foreign exchange trades, owned by the 71 largest banks active in that market. Nearly a year ago, it went live with CLSNet, touted as the first global FX market enterprise application running on blockchain in production, with megabanks Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and Bank of China, Hong Kong, on board. CLSNet was built on Hyperledger Fabric, the enterprise blockchain platform developed by IBM. But a blockchain was not the obvious solution for netting down high volumes of FX trades in 120 currencies, Marquard said recently. I have been very clear from the first time we conceived of CLSNet that it didn't have to be run on blockchain, he told CoinDesk. Blockchain is not essential for that process to run or even to run well. CLS could have opted for a centralized way of doing the calculations and pushing them back out, but didn't for a reason, Marquard said. We are pro-blockchain, don't get me wrong, he said. We wouldn't have put all the investment into standing up a blockchain if we didn't think that it would have some benefit. Marquard wouldn't say how big the investment was, but an industry source put it in the millions of pounds. Specifically, the benefit is having the output of the netting calculation on a blockchain so that both participants are definitely getting the same version. This is valuable, particularly with emerging market currencies where there are inefficiencies and potential for trades to break, Marquard said. But blockchain was not the essential cost-saving element, he said. The more we drive netting into those currencies, the more people will save. So the service will save people money, Marquard said, adding, is that because of blockchain? No, I don't think, hand on heart, I can say that. Progress report. Since launch, two more banks, Bank of America and Intesa Sanpaolo, have joined CLSNet. Marquard said there will be a total of 9 banks live on the platform this year. There are 5 banks live and there are 4 who have been through frustrating month by month almost there, he said. They will go live before year end, they are all in the final stage of testing. All 5 participating banks declined to comment, as did IBM, which built the system. According to Marquard, volumes on CLSNet are growing but not in any way comparable with the main CLS settlement system, which acts as the middleman settling trades in 18 major currencies. The volumes are amounts we are very happy with, he said, declining to give a number. He pointed out that the big currency pairs like dollar, euro are already in the CLS settlement system and don't require CLSNet, adding, how do you compete with $12.8 trillion on the main system? It's going to take years before we can get anywhere near that. I have no aspirations of CLSNet ever getting to the scale of the main settlement system. In fairness, the fact that it is in production sets CLSNet apart from most other enterprise blockchain projects which are at various stages of testing. Meanwhile, CLS is doing analysis in the background to see if it could ultimately create some kind of settlement solution using blockchain, but Marquard said, that's way, way off. He remains skeptical about the rhetoric from a few years ago about distributed ledger technology sweeping up and replacing large chunks of critical payments infrastructure. The big thing blockchain was going to do was the transfer of value, of money and assets, and get rid of all the payment systems. It was just silly, he said. It was a technologist's view of how markets function with very little understanding of those kinds of entities and how they operate. A thoroughgoing understanding has informed the gradual approach being taken with CLSNet, Marquard said, concluding, we knew that we couldn't do a settlement application. We wanted to do something on blockchain to help bring the technology forward, to help participants acclimatize to it and frankly just to keep ourselves in the conversation which it has done. Bitcoin's dropping lightning capacity might not be a bad thing. The Lightning Network is supposed to be Bitcoin's superhero, taking the cryptocurrency to new heights by tackling its toughest and most obvious problem. If cryptocurrency is ever going to go mainstream, it needs to support a million times more transactions than it currently does, which is no easy feat. But by the looks of this graph, Lightning appears to be losing momentum. The amount of funds locked up in the Layer 2 network looks to be decreasing, seeming to indicate that fewer people are using it as a payment method. A Lightning channel is like a gateway to the rest of the network, allowing a user to send a payment to any other user. While Lightning is still considered beta software, and thus risky to use, Bitcoiners have been so enthusiastic about it and using it anyway, for games and beyond, chanting the unofficial slogan "Reckless." As Lightning's capacity increased rapidly over its first year, devotees cheered it on social media. The catch is that, while this number is decreasing, Lightning use might actually still be increasing because of increased privacy of Lightning channels and other channel optimizations. There's no way of knowing the capacity in the Lightning network. We can only know the public channel's capacity, not private, Roy Scheinfeld, CEO of Breeze, told CoinDesk. And at least one company says that at least in their experience Lightning payments are picking up. We are doing increasing dollar value volumes on the Lightning network. What I am seeing is the price going up and thus people need less coins locked up in channels to maintain spending power, Fast Bitcoin's MD Danny Brewster told CoinDesk. A tale of two nodes. So, while so far watching this number has been a spectator sport football for tech geeks, it might not be for much longer. This number will grow harder to track over time. That's because many Lightning wallets do not advertise whether their channels exist to the rest of the network, by default. Under the hood, there are advertised channels which advertise their existence to the rest of the Lightning network and non-advertised channels which don't. Normal channels, used by everyday users who just want to buy pizza and draw dicks online with Lightning, don't need to be advertised. Many wallets in the past few months have been released which default to non-advertised channels. These channels don't show up on any public metrics, so relying on the public metrics alone only really shows half of the picture, Lightning Labs CTO Laulu Osentoken told CoinDesk. Generally, advertised channels only need to be used by routing nodes, so the sturdier nodes that get payments from one person to another and need to be online all the time. Zap creator Jack Mahlers argued it's only responsible that anyone who isn't a routing node uses private, non-advertised channels. Some go as far as to argue that the public capacity is a useless indicator because it doesn't capture all or maybe even most of the money in the Lightning network. Because more apps have been starting to follow these best practices, Scheinfeld guesses that most channels are private, noting that his wallet Breeze has opened thousands of private channels just in the last couple of months alone. Breeze opened thousands of private channels in the last 2 months. Lightning Labs Autopilot also opens private channels, he said. This is one reason why many developers see Lightning as providing more privacy than on-chain Bitcoin transactions. While Bitcoin has a reputation for giving users anonymity, transactions are actually public. Lightning hides a bit more of the transaction details. If a regular Bitcoin transaction is similar to uploading your bank statement to a public website, a Lightning Network transaction is similar to showing each merchant you pay how much money you have in one specific compartment of your wallet. You're still revealing some information, but much less, as Lightning startup SureBits wrote. Garbage day. Another reason the capacity is decreasing is because some entities are closing down Lightning channels that were wasteful. Based on my knowledge, the decrease in channels is simply node operators being rational by closing out channels that have been open for some time, but which don't have notable forwarding activity, Osentoken said. For instance, there's one famous and mysterious anonymous Lightning user by the name of LNBIG who has opened many Lightning channels. They initially debuted by pouring 300 Bitcoin into the Lightning network, giving new meaning to Lightning's reckless catchphrase. At the beginning of my activity, I opened many channels in the hope that they will be used, and due to the imperfection of the autopilot, the person behind LNBIG told CoinDesk. But, the secretive developer said, those channels weren't really used much at all. They were just open and sitting there. But time has shown that many channels have not been used once for 2 to 4 months, for example, and the funds in them are nonetheless blocked, LNBIG continued. The funds are blocked, as LNBIG puts it, because of the way Lightning works. A Lightning channel is like a gateway to the rest of the network, allowing a user to send a payment to any other user. But when someone opens a channel with someone else and doesn't use it, then other people can't use that gateway. So, it makes sense to free up that capacity and wait to see if a new channel opens want to use the capacity, which is exactly what LNBIG decided to do. LNBIG posted a Twitter poll before following through with closing these channels, arguing that the only downside would be the psychological effect that Lightning's capacity would fall down to 825 Bitcoin. As the decrease in Lightning's capacity shows, Twitter encouraged LNBIG to follow through. China Merchants Bank's latest crypto partnership includes STO Investment. The Chinese government is indirectly participating in a security token offering, STO. The Nervous Network STO kicks off on October 16, aiming to raise an undisclosed amount within 2 weeks through the CoinList platform. So far, Polychain Capital confirmed to CoinDesk it will contribute $5.7 million to the STO, in addition to previous investments. Nervous Project co-founder Kevin Wang told CoinDesk that the Hong Kong-based China Merchants Bank International (CMBI), a wholly owned subsidiary of China Merchants Bank, also committed to contribute an undisclosed amount to the public STO. For context, CMBI is not directly owned by the government the way the Bank of China is. Instead, its top 10 shareholders include at least 7 corporations that are partially or fully owned by the state. With regards to the bank's political context, the Wall Street Journal reported diplomatic tensions over alleged sanctions violations raised the possibility that Chinese banks could someday be shut out of the dollar economy, as sanctioned Iranian banks already are. Perhaps this is part of the reason why the Chinese outlet Chain News reported CMBI was investing in Nervous to build an open platform and a new investment bank. CMBI could not be reached for comment. We will update the article if we hear back. Although Wang couldn't specify what that bank's plans might be, he told CoinDesk, CMBI is a strategic partner, both in terms of financial plans and other types of applications they want to utilize for the blockchain. We want to make sure they can utilize the infrastructure. This STO won't be the first time CMBI invested in Nervous tokens. Wang said his token project's $28 million fundraise in 2018, which included CMBI and Sequoia China, was actually a private sale with contracts guaranteeing 14% of the initial token distribution in late 2019. Press interviews with the Nervous team about this investment described it as a partnership aimed at building decentralized applications. Meanwhile, the crypto exchange giant Huobi is partnering with the Nervous Foundation to create a decentralized finance (DeFi) platform that could provide easier capital flows between cryptocurrencies. Wang said the Nervous platform will be a neutral, publicly owned infrastructure that supports other blockchains that are more regulatory compliant. Speaking of these various compatible blockchains scheduled for implementation after mainnet launch in Q4 2019, Wang added, they are basically gateways that real-world assets can flow into. Then they will also be running on top of the bigger ecosystem of Nervous, so that assets can also flow into the permissionless side of the infrastructure and enjoy the wider ecosystem of services, like DeFi services. From STO to DeFi. Even if these partners create a system for capital flows, decentralization is an ambitious goal at best. The Nervous team still needs to get enough miners and node operators to make the system censorship resistant through diversification. The foundation's roadmap implies 23.5% of the initial token supply, which will have control mechanisms but no finite cap, is designated to incentivize open source contributions and business partnerships. Polychain Capital President Joseph Egan told CoinDesk it's too early to decide whether his hedge fund will run a node or mine cryptocurrency for the Nervous project. But, he added, this could turn out to be one of the fund's most lucrative investments. It's one of our highest conviction projects, not just in Asia but globally, Egan said. Describing how Nervous combines some of Bitcoin's layered scaling approach to Ethereum's malleable smart contracts, he added, I think the ability to create smart contracts similar to Ethereum is very compelling. From a technological perspective, Nervous and the underlying token offer something truly unique. Indeed, institutions aren't the only players taking note of this STO. At least four established crypto mining pools participated in the most recent testnet competition before the STO, including F2 Pool and Spark Pool, two of the largest mining pools in the Ethereum community. Wang said this should motivate future node operators. In contrast, the Bitcoin network expanded slowly, quietly, over several years before it attracted lucrative speculation. Even a few hundred nascent network participants would struggle to resist capture from nation-state actors, which calls the public aspect of the project into question. On the other hand, CMBI isn't the only bank aiming to tap into the crypto ecosystem. WEG Bank AG in Germany is exploring direct conduits to decentralized exchanges, DEXs, since two of its shareholders work with or partially own DEX startups. The exchange giant Binance, in addition to working on a DEX of its own, is also a shareholder in the upcoming Founders Bank in Malta. Plus, Egan said it's too soon to assume traditional institutions will become prominent users of the upcoming Nervous platform. It's often 1 to 2 years later that developers really start to use those protocols, Egan said. I still think we're in wait and see mode as to who the primary users will be. The silver lining in Block One's SEC slap on the wrist. The only certain thing to say about the implications of any isolated Securities and Exchange Commission case is that it's risky to assume it sets a precedent. That goes doubly for those in which a settlement is reached with no admission of guilt. That hasn't stopped loads of people in the crypto community armchair analyzing last week's news of Block One's paltry penalty from the SEC over its 2017 sale of EOS ERC-20 tokens. As lawyer Stephen Pally put it over at the Block, some commentary was useful and a whole lot of it was, well, the kind of blather one expects. But that's not to say one can't or should not try to read some tea leaves out of a decision as stunning and historically significant as this one. And while I am no lawyer, I am going to go out on a limb and say that, on balance, there are elements in here that the crypto industry should be happy with. Happiness is not the way many are feeling about this result. A host of crypto commentators are royally angry about it. It seems many folks don't like the Block.One crew. In addition to their disdain for the EOS's blockchain's governance challenges and the worrisome centralization of its network in China, many people also felt that the whopping $4 billion raised in the ICO was, well, obscene. To them, that fundraise tally was the high point, or more accurately, low point of an ICO mania period that many in the community, rightly, want to put behind them. Block One's $24 million payment with no admission of guilt, and a waiver allowing it to continue to legitimately raise money through future securities issues represented a mere 0.6% of the ICO's gargantuan raise. Lined up against up to $225,000 in fines and disgorgement that blockchain-based storage provider Sia also agreed to pay in relation to its much smaller $120,000 unregistered securities sale, it just seemed so unfair. Good lawyers are worth it if you can afford them. Naturally, the announcement got people's minds spinning. Why? Was the soft penalty because Block.One had put geofencing in place and tried to keep its tokens out of the hands of Americans? Maybe. Some argued that the $24 million fine is possibly about as much was raised from U.S. investors. Was it because the SEC now implicitly recognized that EOS has evolved into a decentralized platform and that the new, on-platform tokens into which the ERC-20 tokens were swapped, were not securities? Maybe. Was this an application of the de facto Hinman doctrine? Was there some other, unwritten deal kept off the public record? Who knows? The reality is that the only reliable conclusion to draw from Block One's victory is that it pays to get good lawyers. Proof of that lies in the successful waiver request that Cooley lawyer Karen Ubel submitted on the company's behalf, detailing the lengths to which Block One has since gone to up its compliance game and do the right thing by the SEC. As legal commentator Catherine Wu put it in a scribbled comment that was included in another one of her extremely useful post-decision annotation exercises, fuck man, their lawyers are good. One cynical conclusion to draw, then, is that the crypto startup community is now following the same norms as the Wall Street banks it seeks to dislodge. Here too, it seems, money buys protection, if not from the law per se but from the impediments to business that adverse rulings have on those of lesser means. It's a melancholy thought for those who want this technology to lower barriers to entry and give scrappy garage-based startups a chance to change the world. Clues in cooperation. But I also think the negativity slung at Block.one in this instance is excessive. There's too much desire for schadenfreude in this industry. When people are looking for blood and it's not delivered, their disappointment is palpable. A more upbeat view is possible. And it's also formed from the waiver letter. While its words are those of a Block.one lawyer, not an SEC representative, the letter's details hint at what the SEC could be looking for from token-issuing entities. Here, it's important to note that the Cooley letter came, in Udall's words, after settlement discussions with the SEC, a line that Wu annotated with the observation that the two sides had been back and forth for a hot minute. That suggests its contents captured agreed to elements that formed the SEC's implicit quid pro quo for its light touch. With that in mind, the part of the letter that jumped out at me lay in the section detailing Block.one's cooperative position with the SEC, one adopted in stark contrast with the team from Kick, who have angrily refused to settle over their ICO and are going to court with the SEC. It's the section where the Cooley team highlights Block.one's work on technological mechanisms regarding the token it plans to issue for its decentralized media project, Voice. These include mechanisms aimed at cutting-edge identity verification and transfer restrictions that could be used to support compliance with securities laws in the future, and others that could ensure that future tokens are only provided to individuals in jurisdictions where it has been confirmed that implementation of such token will be fully compliant with all applicable regulations. On all these matters, the letter said, Block.one is initiating a process of consultation and discussion with staff of the division, including the SEC's Strategic Hub for Innovation and Financial Technology, FinHub. Signs of openness to innovation. There's a positive takeaway here about the SEC. The commission has been maddeningly on the fence, or at least stubbornly silent, on how or whether it should embrace some of the more innovative compliance solutions for strengthening security while reducing friction in science. Yet here, in a way, we have evidence that the SEC is not only open to innovation but willing even to reward transgressors who help them get their heads around that innovation. Regulators are an unavoidable reality for startups looking to use blockchain technology to disrupt the old order. Their best hope is not to ignore them, fight them, or try to evade them, but to help them work with the crypto community's developers to employ some of the incredible cryptographic solutions now at hand to design a more inclusive, less friction-filled financial system. Block.one might well have gotten less than it deserves. But its approach with government is worth following. State-owned French bank joins Bitcoin startup's $8 million Series A. We're convinced that Bitcoin is becoming more and more obvious. That's not typically what one might expect to hear from a veteran banker at a public institution. But Véronique Jack of the partially state-owned French investment bank Bpifrance told CoinDesk Bitcoin is becoming a staple of the global economy. That's why Bpifrance just made its first investment in a crypto startup, because the bank wants to play an active role in building Bitcoin's infrastructure. The Lightning-focused startup ACINQ raised an $8 million Series A led by IDInvest Partners, with the participation of Serena and Bpifrance. IDInvest Partners Managing Director Nicholas Debick told CoinDesk this round was also his firm's first investment in a Bitcoin company. As we continue to look at Bitcoin companies, we think that second layer opportunities are a big one and it's definitely something we'll be looking into more, Debick said, adding, if you're building for the digital economy, you need to build a strong and safe infrastructure. What I really like about ACINQ is they are not rushing to launch a product that isn't ready. From Debick's perspective, earlier waves of investment in the Bitcoin economy revolved around mining companies, then exchanges and wallet providers. But traditional firms, like IDInvest, were wary of the timing game required to make significant returns on projects that are still subject to the erratic whims of an immature market and an opaque regulatory climate. By contrast, he said, investing in companies with a long-term focus on the application layer offers a more palatable opportunity. If Lightning lives up to its promise, it's going to relay a lot of transactions, Debick said. When you relay a lot of transactions, there are always ways to make money. Jack agreed that although ACINQ's business model is still unclear, she sees it as one of the leading startups focused on the Lightning Network protocol. The Lightning Network will be where high volumes of transactions could develop in the future, so we wanted to be there, with the infrastructure that will enable these transactions, she said. In a press statement, Serena partner Kamel Zirawal echoed his peers, explaining why a government bank would want to invest in developing layers of the Bitcoin ecosystem. In a context of currency wars and negative interest rates, Bitcoin's value proposition of free, independent currency with an issuance policy set in its protocol is impossible to ignore. All that it needs to achieve its goals is a sound, usable scalability solution. Dark Horse. This Series A brings ACINQ's total funding up to $10 million, CEO Pierre-Marie Padieu told CoinDesk, and will be used to grow the six-man team up to a dozen employees over the next year. We're very picky about the people we hire because it's very hard to find people with the right skills, Padieu told CoinDesk. We are looking for people, but we will take however long it takes. Stepping back, ACINQ has long been the quietest pillar of the Lightning startup trinity, with much of the community development spearheaded by Lightning Labs and Blockstream, both in Silicon Valley. Yet ACINQ has its own Lightning implementation, Eclair, in addition to the Eclair mobile wallet, and Strike, an application program interface API for Lightning, which Padieu compared to the merchant payment processing provider Stripe. He also said the Eclair Lightning wallet has garnered 15,000 downloads via Google Play since it launched in 2018. To date, ACINQ operates the largest capacity Lightning node on the network, supporting over 1,000 channels. Blockstream engineer Rusty Russell told CoinDesk he thinks such diverse implementations benefit end users since it's unclear how the network will evolve. I started working on Bitcoin because of a previous open source project which made my career, Linux. And the one thing we learned from that journey is that we're not going where we think we're going, Russell said, adding, since we don't know where we're going, the more experimentation the merrier. From my vantage point, ACINQ is helping with the standards process. They're absolutely equal partners. Their style is less flashy, but they are going to continue to be a major player in the space, and I expect great things to come. Mobile and approachable. As for ACINQ, Padieu said his startup is focused on mobile devices and payments. It's important because maybe the protocol is the same, but we have different views on what we want to optimize more, he said. It allows anyone to build software that fits their needs. IdInvest's Debek said institutions can view Lightning as a broader application of Bitcoin's potential, a space ripe for more traditional equity deals. As such, ACINQ engineer Bastian Tenturier told CoinDesk that courting investors beyond crypto circles can benefit the entire industry. Bpifrance investing is an even bigger shift. Public institutions are acknowledging the importance of this technology and its future relevance, he said. They aren't trying to shut it down, they aren't ignoring it either, they want to understand it and potentially work with it. Although Tenturier expressed gratitude for the public outreach done by the teams at Blockstream and Lightning Labs, like running community Slack channels, live demonstrations and conferences, his smaller team prefers to minimize its media exposure for the near future. We want to be able to offer a great UX for private, reliable, instant payments that even your grandmother could use, Tenturier said, adding, we're not there yet and we want to make sure we can deliver on that promise before we spend time communicating about it. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.